Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Keep this frequency clear.
What's up, everybody?
Who the fuck is that guy?
Keep this frequency clear.
Great, we're having a delay.
Are you ready?
Coming at ya! Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio, another MMA podcast. This is a Marco and Clearwater hour with some, technical difficulties. You got it. You name it, we got it. Let's get into it because we're pressed for time. Of course, one of the hosts has to jet early. Thanks a lot, Clearwater. So let's go ahead and get him going. The one and only, we go to the man who once kicked a 55-yarder with his eyes closed, the Clearwater Beach Bad Boy.
Guys, thank you for bringing me on the program. The only way I could make that like type of a kick would be with my eyes closed. What an exciting weekend in mixed martial arts. Now, guys, if I'm a little preempted on the show, I'm getting ready to watch Little Women in Dallas, one of the greatest reality shows on TV. I'm not a big reality show guy, despite having been in the show Storage Wars. I was in season 2. Go ahead and check out Hook, Line, and Sucker. But I'm looking at a show right now. Are we aware of what this show is, Little Women in Dallas? Do you guys know what this is?
No, but let's bring on Marco, your co-host, the one and only, the man who always has time for Melania Trump photos, Marco from Waco.
Marco from Waco, I got time for her photos and not her jewelry.
Clearwater, what is this Little Women of Dallas thing?
Oh my God, guys, it's fucking fantastic. It's a bunch of midgets that are chicks. Wow. And they all live in Dallas. One of them is on Dancing with the Stars. Some of them are strippers. They all live in a house together. It's like Bad Girls Club with midgets. And one of them works in a strip club. One of them's like it is the most entertaining show. Guys, the only show, and I'll put this out there to your listeners that can help me with this, is there was a show that was a little bit better years ago where it was these two twin girls that were stuck together by their heads and they were both school teachers.
Lord.
That was fucking phenomenal. That was an absolute, to see them go in and teach a kindergarten class, guys, there is not entertainment out there that could equal a couple of conjoined twins teaching kindergarten class. Guys, you should see the look on those kids' face. But let's get into the MMA, guys, because it was a huge weekend while I watched these midgets wrestle.
Oh my gosh. All right, Clearwater, let's get into it because you were dropping some knowledge on Marco and I right before the show started. So what you got?
Guys, listen, it's serious. I mean, it's easy and it's serious and it's funny and it's not. We joke around a lot on this program. And, you know, I'm a big critic when it comes to the MMA media. I think they're soft. I think they're like one step away from comic book guys. Like, you know, I don't think they have a lot of balls. There's not a lot of Jim Rome's in that society, meaning they don't press for the story. They look for things inside of MMA, but not necessarily the dirt to a large degree. Other media outlets are better at finding that. And everybody laughed at me on the program when I said that Miesha Tate would lose. I said the value is there on the other fighter. Maybe some other people chose her. I'm not 100% sure. By the way, what did I go in UFC 205? What was my record?
I don't know, motherfucker. I don't know.
What? 5-0. Yeah, 5-0. Yeah, that's not good. That's perfect. And, But I come to expect that. You know, sometimes I'll pick five wins, you know, and you go 5-1, 5-2, 5-0, guys. It was like taking candy from a baby because I knew what was going on before the fights ever happened. Reach and takedown and defense and striking. Listen, that's all great when it comes to men. But if there's something going on in women, but when it's something going on in somebody's head, a la George St. Pierre when he lost a few years back to the reality show guy, it happened again here with the Misha Tate fight, and she and Caraway have been broken up since September. If you go out there and you Google the story, there's magazines and publications outside of MMA. Junkie and Weekly aren't covering it, guys. Places like Bloody Elbow, not a lot. But around early September, Caraway and Misha Tate broke up. And they have been together in a business sense or as trainer-trainee in some capacity over the last couple of months. It happened about 2 weeks before her first fight. And then her fight this past weekend, he was there, but they had been apart. She went overseas. It's well documented, guys. He's not living with her anymore. And when I asked Randy Couture on the show, on another show the other day about it, they would not comment. When I said they broke up, they didn't say, no, they didn't. They just said, we don't know anything about that, and we're not talking about it. Well, if Caraway and her were still good, if they were both still dating each other, and I brought it up to their trainers at their gym that they broke up, they would say, no, they didn't. You're wrong. But they said, we don't know anything about that. We're not talking about that. Guys, they're on the outs. In fact, I've even heard that some of them have started dating other people. So Misha Tate has also received tweets from other fighters, and this is out there as well, that have already asked her out within the UFC. So this is a story that the MMA media and radio shows are afraid to cover because they don't want to piss her or him off for fear that they won't come back on the show. And that's, I think, a little bit of the reason she exploded on Dana White. And I'm even hearing Dana White had a little bit to do with the breakup. I'm not sure in what capacity. Maybe he knew more than he told her. But that's really one of the main reasons she lost two in a row, is on her way out.
Wow.
Dude, TMC needs to freaking hire you, dude, because you're getting some dirt. And if what you say, if half the stuff you said is true, I got no reason to doubt you, because according to the sequence of events, it kind of sort of makes sense. There is a lot more to the story that people are letting out to let us know. I'm really interested because I didn't pick Misha Tate to win this fight because I saw he was in a bad mental space for losing to Amanda Nunes, you know, breaking her nose and all this stuff. But if all that other stuff is true, yeah, she was not on a good placement. She felt like she didn't want to even be there. And you saw the result. Raquel Pennington kind of sort of owned her. So, damn, dude. Like I said, if half of the stuff that you're telling us is true, this is a bombshell. And I hope some people out there with cojones get and dig this story out.
Thank you, dummies.
Oh, man. What's the deal with, you know what? I have to tell you, Clearwater, 5-0, you even beat me.
Well, I'm the best.
Well, yeah, it's more like 4-0-1 because there was a fight there that was a draw. So let's be correct there. It's more like 4-0-1. The draw doesn't really count as a win because even if you bet it, you don't get paid unless you bet it a draw.
Clearwater and Marco, I want to ask you this. Did 205 live up to your expectations?
Go ahead, Clearwater.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, my expectations are more on the rise and decline with who wins and loses. You know, I don't really worry about how good the cards are anymore, guys. And I've talked about this on other shows because I'm not dropping $65 a pay-per-view. You know, it's a lot less stressful as to whether or not you got a good product or a good show if you don't have to spend $49 to $60 on the event. So, yeah, I mean, for what I paid for it, it was fucking great.
Marco?
On my end, I love it. You know, I'm a hardcore and a little bit of a USC homer. But, I mean, it did lead to the expectations. So they built it like the greatest car ever, and it actually delivered. History making, you know, we got McGregor there holding two belts, even though one of them belonged to Tyron Woodley. Poor Tyron, you know, he can't get a break. But, yeah, well, how can you complain, dude? He got an amazing co-main, you know, they went into a draw, a little bit of controversy there. Then we got Joanna Jędrzejczyk that even though he whooped Karolina Kowalkiewicz's ass for five rounds, well, four and a half rounds, she still faced a little adversity. And then you got Chris Weidman getting, you know, almost decapitated by a flying knee by Joel Romero. I mean, the main card was all that and a freaking bag of potato chips. And even the feature prelims with Frankie Edgar Stevenson and Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, and Michael Johnson, completely mauling Michael Johnson. Why do you have to complain about this card, man? If you didn't watch it, you're not an MMA fan. And if you watch it and you don't think the card was one of the best cards ever, you need to check your pulse because you must be dead.
Guys, I got to ask you this because we have about 10 more minutes with the Clearwater. He can't even make time for his own show, guys. Clearwater, let's talk about this. How do you score the Woodley Thompson fight? Because I had it for Woodley.
Woodley. I mean, you know, you got to beat the champ to be the champ. But I don't disagree with a draw either. And if you told me that Wonder Boy won, I probably would say whatever. You know, it always and has never made sense that, and I've said this before, a lot of people disagree with it. I want to see the scores after every fucking round. I do not, this isn't ice skating. I don't want somebody to go out there and perform for 15 to 25 minutes and then we find out how they did afterwards. Can you imagine if the Lakers played the Rockets and there was no score until the end? That does not make fucking sense to me. And people say, well, if a guy knows he's up by two or three rounds, he can kind of coast at the end. Well, then let him. I mean, teams take knees in the fourth quarter. It's a sport. It's a game. It's an event. It's a combat sport. I want to see the scores after every fucking round. And to me, that would alleviate a lot of these problems. And they've done this in smaller shows. Marco will tell you they've done it, and it worked out great. But there's a lot more pressure on the refs when they do that in fight than there is afterwards.
Marco, how'd you, brother? Amen. Amen. Because they do it in Thailand too on the Muay Thai contest. They got active betting in between rounds, and they're putting up the scores in between rounds. And nobody's complaining in Thailand the way they do it up there, you know, Muay Thai. So yeah, it could completely change the dynamic of the fight because even though one guy knows he just needs to coach, let's say, on the last round, the other guy knows that he needs to get a finish and he will force a fight. See? So, yeah, one guy might want to run, but the other guy is going to be desperate to finish the fight because he knows he needs to freaking either knock out, submit the guy, or get an outrageous freaking score to either tie or win. So, yeah, I agree with Clearwater on that.
And let me bring up one other thing. There are so many athletes that have fought mixed martial arts, and I'm big on this, guys, whose careers would have changed had they known what the scores were throughout. Let me give you an example of a primetime guy. When Tito Ortiz was dating Jenna Jameson, he went through a period where he was 1-9-1 as a fighter.
Damn.
And now, he was pretty bad there for a while. But seven of those nine losses came in fights that were decided by like a round in the third. A couple of them were to, what's his name? The one, the Ultimate Fighter, the original Ultimate Fighter. He lost twice to him, Forrest Griffin, including one fight where Forrest Griffin thought he lost all three rounds and ran to the locker room, and Dana White had to go get him and tell him to come out because he thought he was going to win the fight. If Tito would have known in every one of those fights where he was on the scorecard, he could have adapted to that fight, and he could have been 7-3-1, you know. And there was even a draw with Rashad Evans that was in there, and you know. So there was a point in time where Tito really got the bitter end of the stick. But if he would have known in the third round, well, I'm not going to go in there and try to get knocked out. I'm going to kind of lay back. But if he knew he had to get a couple of more takedowns, then I think his career and a lot of guys who were in that situation, their careers would have changed. You know, so I'm big on that. I'd like to see it after every round. I think it's only fair.
Makes
like
sense.
I said, man, I completely agree with you, but you got to put that into the Association of Boxing Commissions because that is a carryover from boxing. That's just what it is. Because, you know, most of the 10-point mass system is a carryover from boxing, and they do the same shit in boxing. I would love for them to do the same stuff in boxing after this round to let you know the score. So even the boxers know, okay, I need to start picking it up, otherwise I'm going to lose this fight. Yeah, but, you know, this freaking knucklehead dinosaurs that live on the freaking Stone Age, so it's going to take a freaking out of freaking Congress for them to do that shit.
And one other thing, Marco, and Marco would remember this, and then I'll drop it. Years ago, you could go in the original Pride Fighting Championships, let's say maybe 1 through 9, even before Bushido, and I have all the DVDs, I've watched them all a million times, you could go in a fight and lose every fucking round, but there was no score. There was no scorecard. So there was guys taking fights against Gracies, getting their asses beat, but lasting 15 to 25 minutes, and it went down as a draw. Marco, do you remember that?
I remember perfectly, dude. It's a little pride, you know, the prize system where they score the fights as a whole instead of as round per round. But like I said, we are on the carryover system of the 10-point mass system that is like a boxing freaking system. And we're going to have to live and die with it because it's going to take a huge overhaul of the whole sport for everybody to upset anything but the 10-point mass system. We've been doing it for way too long, and people get used to the stuff, you know? It's like people got super pissed off when they say they want to try to take away the extra point in football. Like, there almost was a riot on the NFL fans. Like, why are you taking the extra point away? So they push it back a little bit, but we still got the extra point. So, like I said, it's going to take an act of Congress for us to overhaul the old freaking 10-point mass system.
Guys, before we put UFC 205 to bed, I want to ask you guys one last thing. Let's talk McGregor, because that is the talk. I never bet on him. I never bet against him any longer. Heck, I don't bet at all, for that matter. But are you surprised, Cetra the Triple B, at all on what McGregor does? And what do you see next for him?
No, he's impossible to bet against. It would take – the money would have to really be there on an underdog for him to lose. Not until he's about 30 years old would I strategically bet against him continuously. So I wasn't surprised. The money was coming in on him late, which led me to believe that some big timers were putting lots of money on him. I liked him from the start. I thought it was a great line. And when I saw that he could not shoot in and take him down in the first round, I knew it was just a matter of time. And, you know, like I said, anybody with that bad of a hairline, I'm just not putting money on.
Oh,
oh, my God.
Marco?
That is funny.
I've been singing
Conor's praises all week, man. The guy put a masterful performance. Showmanship, putting his hands behind his back, a la Anderson Silva, Roy Jones Jr. He put up a show. Make Eddie Alvarez look like he didn't belong. And all respect to Eddie Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez is probably one of the top 10 best lightweights ever. The guy had belts on every single organization you've ever been on. And whether you like it or not, he was the UFC champion. He beat Rafael Dos Anjos fair and square. And he made Eddie Alvarez like he didn't belong there, dude, and knock him out. Eddie Alvarez has not been knocked out since 2008. Think about that. Since 2008, Michael Chandler put a beating on Eddie Alvarez, and he still couldn't knock him out. So all my respect to Conor. What I think is next for him, he's having a baby first. He's going to be a dad. But it's either going to be Nate Diaz or Tyron Woodley, because those are the money shots when Alex George St. Pierre wants to get a fight with him. Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson are going to either have to fight each other or wait. And Jose Aldo is shit out of luck because he already beat him in 13 seconds and there is no money on that fight. So Conor holds all the cash right now. Who are we kidding? He's going to demand more money. He's not going to get a piece of the ownership. That's not going to happen. They're going to tell him, you want ownership, you got to pay for it. Because every other athlete that get ownership of anything put their own money down. Ask Floyd Mayweather. He created Floyd Mayweather Promotions with his own money. Ask freaking Magic Johnson. Ask Michael Jordan. He get his own team, put his own money down. Nothing gets given to you for free. But he can ask for more money, and they're going to give it to him. Because according to everybody, I mean, An MMA show. The UFC broke the freaking gay record for Madison Square Garden. Not the WWE, not boxing, not the rock stars, not the freaking comedians. a freaking MMA show, $17.7 million gate. That is a big freaking feather on Conor's cap, because that is because of Conor McGregor. And according to the projections, this is going to blow away the freaking pay-per-view record that is 1.65 million. They're talking anything from 1.8 to 2 million buys.
Damn.
But yeah, Conor sold the cars. Like, Conor's going to get paid, and he's going to get to pick and choose who's going to fight next. They're even talking about Floyd Mayweather again, for crying out loud. And I wouldn't put it, I couldn't even doubt that one either, because Floyd likes to make money, and Conor is bringing a lot of eyeballs to a pay-per-view with him, so who knows?
All right, let's take the next five to keep the Clearwater for as long as we can. Clearwater, let's talk Bellator 165, because this is the biggest card, I think, that I've seen Bellator have that actually means something. Chandler versus Henderson. The odds are the Clearwater, you know what, I just went over to the Little Women of Dallas, don't make fun of me, website. I don't know why, but I'm on there. All right, Bellator 165, Clearwater, Chandler versus Henderson. Benson Henderson, a plus 150. Chandler, minus 170. What are your thoughts on that, Clearwater?
I like Chandler. I've liked Chandler since I first saw him. I think it's what he wants to do. And when you have a fighter that's that hungry, no matter what they want to do, it's hard to bet against him. So if I had to put money out there, I actually would go Chandler. But I got to correct something Marco said about Conor McGregor. He doesn't have one kid on the way, guys. He has two kids on the way. He was outed in the press conference by Eddie Alvarez. He ignored the comment, and I'm reading right now out there that like Eddie Alvarez said, the big announcement in a couple of days after the fight is he's going to be a father. He's having two kids, but his girlfriend is not pregnant with twins. He actually said that. Watch the press conference, and you should have seen the look on Conor McGregor's face. It's the only time I've ever seen him stonewalled with a comment. So he's got two that's kids true. On the way, guys, and that's why he's panicking a little bit. This is big.
That would be great. That would be freaking awesome.
I hope one's black.
It could be. Any idea who the other one is?
Who knows?
No, I'm searching for it now, but it'll come out in time, guys. But I love Chandler. I love Bellator. I've always liked Bellator. You know, there were some things that they did that were a little bizarre, but I kind of like the mutant fights. You know, I like that aspect of it. I like the fact that they're willing to try different things. I like Dada 5000. Guys, I'm into all that shit.
Marco, who do you have? Chandler?
I agree with Clearwater. I also got Chandler. Benson Henderson was on the Luke Thomas show on SiriusXM today. You know, he's talking about the fact that he didn't like his last performances, you know, with the Frady kid and with Kareshka. Benson is getting old, man. He's actually 33, 34 years old. He's on the running of 30 for a freaking lightweight. And I don't think he got the same desire that he used to have. Man, he's not fighting with the same intensity. He's fighting a little bit too safe. I mean, the Frady guy was beating his ass before his leg fell apart. And I just don't like the way Benson is fighting. He's just going through the motions. And Chandler, even though I don't think he's as elite as Benson, I think he wants it more. And, freaking Chandler lost twice to freaking Will Brooks and then Eddie Alvarez. There's no slouch there, you know. But when he has to win the one that he needs to win, he looks pretty good. And he looked really good on his last fight, you know, knocking out the other Freddy brother. So I'm picking up Chandler, and I'm actually picking him up on a third-round TKO over Benson Henderson. I think he got the punching power, and he got the stamina and the greediness to put Benson against the fence and rough him up and cut him with a freaking left or right hook and then just beating him out until the referee pulls him off, man. So I'm going with Chandler on this one.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. I want Bendo to win, but I think it's Chandler as I'm losing my voice. Clearwater, you have room for one more?
Got one more, and then I got to fly, guys. But I love the program. I think you guys do a great job on here, guys. And I know right now when I leave, the listeners will follow, guys. But I think you guys should all stay tuned, listen to the end of the program.
Clearwater, Musasi versus Hall 2. What do you have?
Give me. I'd have to have a line on that. I would go with Massasi. I like Massasi. I'd like to know what the line is. I don't think that would waver much as to what I would choose, but
-550 for Massasi, +425 for Hall.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, that's a 5-1 favorite. You know, that's almost that's almost George St. Pierre and what was the guy that beat him? The reality show guy, the little bald guy from New York.
Matt Sarah.
That's close to a Matt Sarah line, guys. That's very close to a Matt Sarah line. Massasi probably runs him. Also, one of my picks, I think I even called the time and the round on that McGregor fight last show. You might want to check the tapes on that.
Will do. All right, Clearwater, we'll see you next week on your own show.
Guys, remember, it's never too late.
It's never too late, I guess.
Is that it? Is that it?
I guess that's it.
And like that, he's gone?
Like that, he's gone.
All right. We won't play his theme because he did the Chael Sonnen on us.
He went kaboom. Hey, let's talk about Mr. Michael Venom Page, bro.
Let's go into that. So, I don't think this is much of a fight. Venom Page, of course, 11-0. Fernando Gonzalez, a salty 25-13. Actually, that's not that bad, I guess. But it's clearly, I mean, if you look at the height difference is huge. The weight difference, honestly, Fernando Gonzalez looks like me. So I don't see much of a fight, Marco. What do you have there? Let's go with the line on that one just to show you. Fernando Gonzalez, a +325. Venom Page, Marco, a -475.
And that is exactly what it should be, bro. This is a serviceable fight for Michael Venom Page. You know, Coker is really good at matching the people that he wants to push with fights that are winnable. And this is a super winnable fight for Michael Venom Page. Gonzalez is not known as a wrestling ace. He's not really a wrestler. He's kind of a brawler, and they're good luck trying to brawl with Michael Venom Page. Venom Page is going to style on this guy. Maybe a late first round, second round TKO or knockout. I don't see a way for Gonzalez to win this fight unless he gets super, super lucky like this kid Avila did against freaking that Russian dude. What was his name? Like the last Bellator fight. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Lima. Lima and Koreshkov?
No, Lima, the heavyweights.
Boy, you're going to get me on that.
I know. I am drawing a blank right now. I'm going to kill myself because as soon as the show ends, I'm going to remember the name of that Russian that was coming back, making his return on Foreign Strike Force. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. He was supposed to win.
Yes,
yes. He got knocked the fuck out. Well, same deal with Gonzalez. Like, his only venue to win is he gets a one super lucky shot and cash Michael Venom Page by surprise, but I don't see that happening. You know, Page is an elite striker. He knows how to manage distance. He got chased off Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, super athletic. You know, and this is just a showcase fight for Venom Page. They got him in a common event for a reason. And, you know, I hope, and I truly, truly hope after this, they're going to put MVP against Douglas Lima for their Bellator championship. Ooh. Because enough of cuddling this guy, you know, he's already a well-known commodity. People talk about him, and you feed him enough freaking tomato cans. If you don't give him Douglas Lima, give him freaking Koreshkov, you know, the former champion, to see what the guy got. Because he's either next fight, a title fight, or one more fight, and then the title fight. No more cuddling this guy anymore. Give him a tough fight after this.
That's what I was just going to ask you, Marco. I mean, who has he fought? Cyborg, not really much. And I got to be honest with you, Marco, tell me if I'm wrong here. And I heard this mentioned on Junkie. But what's going on with Bellator and the welterweights? Because they're the biggest, tallest guys I've seen in welterweight, right? Venom Page, 6'3". I don't know how big Koreshkov is, but he's tall. Lima's at least 6'1". These guys are tall.
You know, they must have some Mexican supplements. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
The non-onit supplements. Here we go.
They don't have USADA in Bellator. You know that.
That's true.
USADA does not mess with Bellator because, you know, they don't want to pay that money. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. But let's just assume that they're fighting the correct way. They're just tall guys, man. I mean, back on the day when Anthony Johnson was dropping all the way down to 170, he was also a tall welterweight. You remember that? So
I do.
There you go.
But then again, a different time, right?
Steroids. We're talking about steroids.
All right. Let's move on. So I do want to go into one thing on Bellator. What kind of numbers do you think this is going to do, Marco? Because obviously there's not pay per view numbers, but we do know that the Dana 5000 and the Kimbo numbers were huge. Will this do good numbers? Because I will be there that night.
Okay, remember, it's going at the same time that UFC Fight Night 100 is going up. So they're going to split that demographic. And there is also a lot of college football going on. I don't think it's going to do too good, man. And I tell you why. Not only because college football is, in the middle of this whole thing, but also they have to split the demographic they're attacking with the USC. And a lot of people know the USC happens on Saturday. They don't know Bellator happens on Saturdays, man. They are used to having Bellator on
Friday.
And I haven't seen enough publicity on Spike and any other venues, you know, from Viacom to remind people that this fight is happening on Saturday instead of Friday. So I think that is going to hurt them. I would consider that a good night if they do anything close to 800,000, but I think it's going to be closer to 600,000 views. And the same for the
That's
UFC. It goes both ways. It goes both ways.
Will they do better numbers than UFC Fight Night 100?
No, that I cannot tell you, bro. I think they got the better card, the better main and co-main. They do that for sure, but I do not know. I mean, the UFC is riding high from UFC 205. You know, they're riding that wave, so they might have some carryover for this fight. They got two recognizable names on the main event, you know, Ryan Bader and Little Nog. So it's going to be a close call. I would say the UFC might get 800,000, 850,000. I'll say Bellator get anything between 750 to 800,000. I still get the edge of the UFC by like 50,000 views.
Wow.
But like I said, a little bit of a hangover from UFC 205 after the fantastic numbers that they made. You know, they broke records on the prelims for the FS1, and they brought the pay-per-view record. So it's going to be a little bit of a hangover, and people are going to kind of sort of unplug themselves for a little bit until probably the next pay-per-view. So yeah, anything about 800,000, I consider it a good night. Below that, you know, it's because of where the card is placed, and of course because college football is around.
All right, Marco, let's get into it. UFC Fight Night 99. And that's Musasi versus Hall 2. And you guys know I'm a huge, huge, huge Hall fan. I might be the only one that's a Hall fan, to be honest with you, Marco. I don't see this. And obviously, I defer to you guys on the odds all the time. So I don't think this is going to be very good for Hall. I do agree with Musasi that he got a little lucky there. What you got, Marco?
It's going to be Musasi all the way, bro. Like, notwithstanding the fact that he lost the last fight against Uriah Hall, it was a big, you know, spinning, flying kick where he was, like, diving for a takedown and just having to hit him in the face, followed by a knee, followed by a whole bunch of freaking punches. But, remember, Musasi was winning that fight. On the first round, he owned Uriah Hall on the ground. He owned him. And Uriah Hall has been on a skid lately. You know, he got TKO by Derek Brunson in his last fight. He had a loss before that, too. On the other hand, Musasi is on a winning streak, and he's been looking really good. He freaking owned Beto Belfort he made Vitor Belfort look like Vitor, you need to retire. You know, I'm picking Gegard Mousasi. It is a foul round fight. So I think this plays well for Gegard too. Uriah Hall tends to freeze up, tends to not pull the trigger, and that is going to be his downfall. The way Gegard Mousasi has been looking lately, he looks like a man on a mission. You know, he's been very, very vocal about the fact that, you know, he's calling out the guys at the top of the heap. Of course, Romero is going to be the number one contender, but now that Wyman lost and Rocco is on the shelf, the next two that you have to look out for is Jacare and Gegard Mousasi. And I think Mousasi is gonna freaking school Uriah Hall. It's gonna take him to the ground, and then when he gets up, he's gonna stab him with his jab. Eventually, he's gonna TKO Hall in the third round, and he'll become an immediate contender, probably number two or number three, right behind Romero and Jacare.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Marco. And, you know, obviously the odds are with you there with Uriah Hall being a plus 425 dog. But I agree with you. Even though I'm a huge Uriah Hall, I think he got lucky, like you said. I think Mousasi does it probably in the second round, right? The first one went to the second round. I think it goes to the second round. I give it to Mousasi, probably some sort of KO or TKO. I agree with you there. Let's go to the lightweight. We go Ross Pearson versus Stevie Ray. Not much of a card there. I think it's really, really top heavy, Marco. And so it'll be interesting what this one does. Is this one on Fight Pass? Because I don't think it's on FS1,
This is an early card on Fight Pass. So you got to get up a little early for the first card and watch it in the morning. It's going to be ending around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, and then take a couple of hours break, and then start all over again for the car from Sao Paulo, Brazil. So, yeah, it's 2-1, one in Fight Pass, and the other one on FS1.
Darn, all day we're going to be watching this. So, I won't get to watch UFC Fight Night 100, Marco, because I'm going to be in Bellator. But Pearson versus Ray, the 32-year-old, 19-12-1 versus Stevie Ray, 26 years old, 19-6. How do you see it, Marco?
I like Stevie Ray's style, man. He's a up and comer, you know, a young guy. But I don't think he's ready for the bright lights, man. I'm gonna ride it with Ross Pearson on this one, just because his grittiness, his toughness. He's a boxing, and he's a very savvy fighter, and he's got a really good record when he fights in the United Kingdom. So I'm going with Ross Pearson on this one. It's probably going to be a decision, and like I said, I'm taking Ross Pearson because he's the more experienced veteran. He's going to find a way to grind it out and use his boxing that I think is much better than Stevie Ray's, and outpoint this guy. He's gonna have to watch himself on the ground exchanges, because Steve Reddy says is a very decent grappler. He's not an elite grappler, but he's very decent. But if Ross Pearson can keep it at his boxing range and grinding against the cage where he's really good at, it's his fight to lose. I'm taking Ross Pearson on a 29-28 decision. Let's give Steve Reddy a little bit of love.
Wow. You know what, Marco? Is this considered a live dog? Because it's Ross Pearson minus 120, Stevie Ray plus 100. Is that a pick'em, pretty much?
That is a pick'em, yeah. It's like those are so close that, like I said, either nobody gives a shit about the fight or they're so evenly matched that that people are putting the line really close. But that is what I'm giving this to Ross, because they're so close, I think he's better at his better knowledge is going to allow him to carry the fight to the end and get a unanimous decision.
Believe it or not, I'm picking Stevie Ray, Marco, in the probably second round KO, TKO. I'm not joking. I think Stevie Ray gets it done. I think Ross Pearson, even though he's a hard hitter, his chin isn't very well. And Stevie Ray is also fighting at home-ish, right, because he is Scottish. So even though this is in Ireland, it's rather close to home. So I'm picking Ray in some sort of TKO, a KO in a second. I was more interested in the Artem versus Ishihara fight. Just out of curiosity, quickly there, who do you got in that? Because I have Ishihara.
Teruto! What are my bitches?
Oh, boy.
That dude. I gotta ride the Teruto horse until it freaking breaks out because I love that dude. It's fun. He got knockout power. He got personality. And Teruto Ishihara all day, man. He's got a second round knockout. How about that?
Now, Teruto Ishihara, you know, if this was in Georgia, I would ask Dean to see what he thought. And guess what? Just like that,
Georgia. Georgia.
Dean from Georgia.
What's going on? What's up, gentlemen?
Dean, it's Marco and I. Clearwater bounced early. So just quickly on this one, just out of curiosity, Musashi Hall, who do you have?
I like Musashi. I think he'll make – he was kind of dominating the first fight. Hall, you know, Hall hit him with the, you know, that one big shot. I think since then, you know, Hall's very inconsistent. You know, what Hall shows up, that's the key. Musashi, you know, sometimes he makes that once or twice he'll make that mental mistake and he'll get caught. But other than that, he's just solid, technical skills. You know, you're always going to be in a fight with Musashi. With Uriah Hall, you have no idea which one's going to show up. But I do think since then, I think Musashi will make the necessary changes. He'll fight a smarter fight, and it'll probably be a late stoppage, probably a third round, fourth round, because Hall doesn't have much of a gas tank. I forgot it. Are they making it a – because it was a late change
it's a
to the
rounder.
Main
– oh,
it's a five-rounder? Yeah, I'd say I would predict third, fourth round TKO stoppage. Masashi.
Wow, they made it a five-rounder, Marco?
All main events, five-rounders.
Wow.
No, but because not all main events – not necessarily, Marco. That's not the case on every single one because – but due to the fact, I mean, maybe because they did have a couple extra weeks. If it was like the main event dropped out like 2 weeks ago, sometimes they don't make them, you know, because there's contract negotiations. They have to pay them more money just to train. And sometimes they're not fully prepared. They're not training for a five-round fight by, say, three-round fight. So
as far as majority of around that because they got plenty of time for they got plenty of notice. Yeah. You know, Gunnar Nelson fell off like a month ago, so. No, even looking at that, 1.5 ago he got injured.
Yeah, longer.
So they have enough. They had enough time, but I like Musashi. He's more technically sound. He has a, if the world beater Uriah Hall comes to show up, then it's gonna be a really tough fight, and he could possibly pull it off. He could probably catch Musashi, but I don't think that's gonna happen. I think Musashi will. Fight a smarter fight and beat him through. I mean, I think Hall will have his moments in the fight, but I think I just think Musashi is a more technical striker, a better all-around game in mixed martial arts.
Hey guys, we were going to go into the Ross Pearson and Stevie Ray, and then Marco gave us this.
Who the fuck is that guy?
So never mind. All right. By the way, when Dana White found out that Dean was calling, he wanted to say hi. All right, let's go, guys. Let's go to the tail of the tape. We go, guys. UFC Fight Night 100. Bader versus Little Nog. Ryan Bader, well, we all know what happened to his last fight, so poor guy. You know, I like Darth Bader. I really do. I think, you know, well, at least the Anthony Johnson, right? He did beat Latifi. I was kind of surprised by that. Queen Latifi doesn't seem to do very well. Guys, he's going up against Little Nog. I don't know how many fights he has left. Dean, what you got?
You know, it's pretty sad when, you know, it's so memorable that you don't even remember the first Little Nog and Bader fight. I think Bader will be able to wrestle him, but you know, Little Nog has proved me wrong quite a few times. Every time he goes against those elite type wrestlers, you know, he's been able to outbox them because he is a a Brazilian Olympic wrestler. I mean, not wrestler, but boxer. He does have great stand-up. His boxing, as a technical aspect of his boxing game, is on point. But I just think Bader, he's showed improved striking. He's only kind of, Bader just kind of loses to the top five echelon in the top tier type light heavyweight. But other than that, he, you know, beats pretty much everyone from the bottom half of the top 10 to the, you know, and below. But he can't get above that hump every time he goes against a top five type opponent, and he'll usually get either dominated or he'll lose. But I do think Bader will be able to pull it off. I think Little Nog, his only opportunity is like early in the fight, maybe if he catches, you know, Bader flat-footed. But Bader showed pretty good footwork over the last two fights, improved footwork. So I don't think he may not catch him flat-footed. And Bader's transitions from his strike into his takedowns pretty decent. And I think he'll be able to control Little Nog. You know, Little Nog is a decorated black belt on the ground, but I think Bader's defense and top game control will be a little bit too much for a Little Nog, and he'll probably wear on him because, you know, he is a bigger light heavyweight than Little Nog, and, you know, he'll wear on him and then arms and stuff will get tired. So his technical striking, his boxing, if it goes in the later rounds, will not be as crisp, I believe. But I take Bader by probably like a long, boring, dragged out decision, you know, unless you could catch him like late with like maybe a potential TKO. But I'm thinking like long decision, boring fight.
Damn, Marco, look at that. Every single time Gene shows up. Good Lord.
The professor is on the house. The professor is in the house.
Marco, what you got? Because this is apparently Bader's a huge favorite, right? At a minus 350.
Yes, he is a 3-1 favorite. And I agree with the assessment of Dean, man. I mean, Ryan Bader beat the crap out of Little Nog right before he fought John Jones back on the day. And oddly enough, man, you know, Ryan Bader might be next for the title because, you know, Little Nog was supposed to fight Gustafsson, and Gustafsson blew his back, so he's out for a while. Glover Teixeira just got his head blown out of his shoulders by Anthony Johnson, so he's out for a while. Johnson and Cormier are fighting. If Cormier wins, the next logical guy next is Ryan Bader. So if Ryan Bader wins this fight that I expect him to do, Ryan Bader might be fighting for the title next against Daniel Cormier because there is no John Jones until next July. So that's going to be interesting if Ryan Bader all of a sudden becomes the light heavyweight champion. That tells you a lot about the landscape of light heavyweight right now. But, I don't see a way for Little Nog to win this fight. The guy is probably 3 years past, you know, his retirement point. He's been fighting on fumes. That win against Patrick Cummins, notwithstanding, you know, he won that fight. But against a guy that is not to be a good striker, you know, good wrestler, but not a good striker. And Bader only loses to the very best. And that's just the reality of it. He need the head of Queen Latifah. what can I say? Ryan Bader is going to probably do the same that he did to Rashad Evans. You know, show very, very good improved striking, keeping the distance, keeping a good pace. He's a really good athlete. He's going to grind when he needs to grind just to get freaking a Little Nog tired and you know, not let him get off his boxing game, and then try to keep him at distance, strike when he needs to, wrestle when he needs to, and he's gonna have a pretty dominant 50-45 decision on this fight. Unanimous 50-45 decision for Ryan Bader and probably the next contender.
Wow, you know what, guys? I agree with you 100% that it's going to be Bader, but I see Darth Vader somehow getting a K or a TKO in the third against Little Nog. Because, I mean, listen, I'm just a few years older than Little Nog. That's telling you all you need to know there, guys. Let's move on because I want to go into two more fights, guys, if you'll allow me. Thomas Almeida versus Albert Morales. Dean, Thomas Almeida, a huge favorite, I think, at a minus 320. Albert Morales coming back at a plus 260. Dean, what you got?
You know, Thomas Almeida has been identified as, you know, before he lost that fight to Cody Garbrandt, they hyped him up pretty bad as a phenom. He had a pretty much kind of a padded, if you look at his record, you know, a lot of people had subpar records, you know, until he got into the UFC. In the UFC, I mean, he beat, you know, Gorman, decision. I know he beat Pickett, and I remember him beating Anthony Berchek. I think he had one more fight, but I remember those off the top of my head. But he looked flat-footed against Cody Garbrandt. I mean, Cody Garbrandt, you know, he shows some devastating power, and his opponent, I watched him in, I believe it was Legacy, I think it was Legacy, and I mean, he doesn't have the same amount of experience, because he has a short record, but the guy definitely has some knockout power. He's pretty intense. I'm looking now. It was RFA.
Or RFA. World Series maybe.
Yeah, no, and he was pretty devastating when he was in the one or two fights that I've watched him. I think it was the RFA fight that I saw. I'm looking at it right now. He came in there, smashed the guy, but I think Almeida is gonna have he's from that part of Brazil. Was it Sao Paulo, whatever it is.
Sao Paulo, yeah.
Sao Paulo. He's from that area. He's gonna have thousands of people. He has, you know, he took a little bit of time from his previous loss, so he's able to work up some loose ends. I think, you know, you got this Morales kid, although he is very aggressive with his fighting style, I think that's gonna get him in trouble. I think, you know, he's either gonna come in there, he's gonna clip, Almeida, which probably won't. I think Almeida, you know, with the embarrassing loss, because he sees now, look at Cody Garbrandt's fighting for the title. He was literally one or two fights away from that. If he had to beat Cody Garbrandt, maybe one more fight, he'd be fighting for the strap. Potentially. So, I mean, he sees himself, he knows with a couple of big wins, he's right there in the picture because he has so much hype behind him. The Brazilian fighters, you know, if you look up and down the card, there's not that many. There's not that many in the for the Brazilian fighters to warrant USC going to Brazil 3, 4, 5 times a year and trying to. All the other fighters are getting older. Your Vitors are getting older. No more really Anderson Silva, Shogun Hua. All these guys are on their way out. Little Nob. All these guys are on their way out. They need these young stars, and he's one that the people. You know, will fall behind. He just needs a couple of another big wins, and the USC can really promote him. So I take Thomas Almeida, probably TKO second round.
Look at that, Marco.
Well, it's like the reason this guy is the favorite to win is because they're trying to showcase him in freaking Brazil, dude. Yeah, Thomas Almeida, in my book, is a more talented guy. It's a blue chipper. Yeah, he had that devastating loss against Cody Garbrandt. That is why he's fighting a guy that is not such a known commodity. They're trying to build his confidence back up. Because like Tim was saying, they need stars in Brazil, and Thomas Almeida is potentially one of those stars. So I think this is they cherry-picked this guy specifically for Thomas Almeida to look good in Brazil, to build his confidence back up, showcase him a little bit. It's going to be a comfortable win for him. I'm going to pick a second round submission just to make it interesting. Thomas Almeida is going to, you know, keep this guy, Ooh. Get him in the ground, get his back, and then real naked choke this dude. Thomas Almeida, for me, is the most talented guy, the guy that they're going to try to get behind. There is a history now with Cody Garbrandt. If he, for whatever reason, get the strap, you know, you got a made-on rival for Thomas Almeida, you know, and a flat-on history there. So, yeah, Thomas Almeida, all day for me.
Wow, in a submission? I don't think Thomas Almeida knows how to submit anyone any longer. Yeah. I mean, good Lord.
His last seven fights, he's won, or his last six wins, he's won five out of knockout, one unanimous decision. So,
wow, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking the submission, because I want to mix it up, brother. He's in Brazil. Wow. He wants to do some BJJ.
I mean, I think these odds are right with this fight. When I'm looking at, you know, the Irish card, you know, I think some of the Irish fighters, the European fighters are getting just extra push because people are betting on them because they're their, you know, hometown favorite. But I mean, I definitely think a 3-1 favorite to a kind of unknown Morales, to a person that's been in the top 15 rankings, undefeated minus the one, I mean, until he had that one loss, has 5-6 UFC wins against someone that has zero UFC wins. I'm almost surprised the odds are not even a little higher than these. But
wow. By the way, go ahead, Dean.
Go ahead, Dean.
No, I was just saying I could see these odds being higher, but the only problem is because Morales is a very aggressive fighter, and that's probably what some people, you know, he has a very similar, not saying he's nowhere in comparison to Cody Garbrandt, but he's just a very aggressive fighter. Yeah. So, you know, you got to question, like, you know, Thomas Almeida, other than that Pickett fight, his chin has never been questioned. You know, when he fought Brad Pickett at, what was that, UFC 189, with a gathering, or 187, one of those. When he fought Brad Pickett as the undercard, I mean, when he was on the fight card with, that was at the gathering, you know, that was the only time that his chin has been tested. And then two fights after that, he gets knocked out. You're going to get a very aggressive fighter, but I just think technically he has all the tools in the world to beat him. So I think Almeida, I'm surprised the odds are actually not even higher.
Well, I totally agree with you guys.
You got Claudia Gadelha. Yeah, she's dominant. She's the number two fighter in that thing. But she's fighting someone that has UFC victories, that is very dangerous. And she's almost a 5-1 favorite. Like, that's, I mean, I don't think Casey could beat her, but that's one you just kind of throw out there, throw $20 on, and potentially, if she gets lucky.
They're jumping your shot, Dink.
No, but you know what? I'm glad we got to go there. So I'm picking Almeida over Morales, probably in some KO or TKO, and I don't know what round, guys. Let's just say second. But let's get into this one, guys, that I think is pretty interesting. And this is the one thing I was going to say, guys. By the way, we have at UFC Fight Night 99. Guys, we have two female fights that no one's talking about, and maybe rightly so, even though I'm into it. Amanda Bobby Cooper, of course, and friend to the show, Marianne Renault, going up against some beautiful Milana Dudieva. But let's go into this one, guys, that I think – people do care about. Claudia Gadelha versus Courtney. What is it? What does she call herself? Courtney Casey, the hands of stone, or what is it? Cast iron, right? Cast iron Courtney Casey. Dean, you're picking Gadelha, or who are you choosing?
I think Gadelha is, I think she's the, I think she got caught. Versus, I mean, both her fights against Joanna was extremely close. I think on any given day, one round goes, if there was a little bit more production out of her in the later round, she would have beat Joanna. I think she's, you know, wow. If she's not at the top, she is right there at number, slim number two. And Carolina just fought her a close fight, but I still think, Claudia is better than her. I think Claudia is right up there with Joanna. I think she is elite for that division. I'm thinking if they ever did a 125 division, Joanna would probably move up and Claudia would run that division.
Wow.
So I take Claudia. Her wrestling is going to be too much for Courtney. Courtney is a very, very, could be a very, very dangerous fighter. She did really well against a wrestler in Marcos, and she beat her. And I mean, she's looked good in her other fights too. But I just think Claudia is a different animal. I think, you know, I'm very impressed with Claudia. I loved her on the show. I'm a huge fan of her, and I think she gets it done. I think with, she's tough. Since it's a 3-round fight, I would say Claudia 30-27 decision, because Courtney Cates, if you look at her record, you know, she either, you know, she wins, or she's a scrapper, and she'll go down fighting. You know, it's really hard to knock her out or submit her or something like that. But I think Claudia will get it done, dominant, either late submission or dominant decision. You know, she'll be a 30-27, but she is scrappy. But I just think this step up is too early for her. That just shows how shallow between the top echelon of the division and the lower part of that division. And, you know, certain people are already matched up. Like Courtney Casey doesn't belong in the cage with Claudia. She belongs in the, she's a very strong competitor, but she doesn't belong in the cage with Claudia. I think, you know, she needs someone like in that 10 to 15 range, or just outside the top 15 range. She doesn't need the number one or number two fighter in the world.
So Marco, the odds maker support Dean. Yeah, Claudia at a minus 450.
Yeah. And it's not about what it's supposed to be, bro. Claudia Gadelha is going to probably wrestle for Courtney for two solid rounds. See, my problem with Claudia Gadelha is her gas tank. She's good for 1.5 to 2 rounds, and then her gas tank disappeared. That's what happened to her in her two Joanna fights. On the first fight, she was good for 1.5 rounds, and then her gas tank depleted, and Joanna did what she does. And then the same deal happened on the second fight. She was solid for 2 rounds straight. And then her gas tank went away, and Joanna put a masterpiece on her. She rearranged her face. So because she's a 3-rounder, and because she is rightfully probably the number 1 or 2 contender in the world, I'm going to pick Claudia Gadelha. It's going to be a dominant performance, 30-27. I would love to see her fight Jessica Andrade, because for my money, Jessica Andrade is probably the next coming of Claudia Gadelha. That little pitbull is a freaking monster, and she doesn't got cardio issues like Claudia Gadelha does. So I don't think they're going to match them out, because they're going to keep them separated so they can fight Joanna probably in the future. But that is a fight for me to make, Jessica Andrade versus Claudia Gadelha. But yeah, Claudia's going to put some style points on this girl on the ground. Rough her up, you know. Courtney is a scrapper, like Dean was saying. She's somebody that is not gonna give out easy. She's gonna probably fight to the end, but still, she's gonna get outpointed. And you know, we're gonna see a good, greedy performer by Courtney and a dominant performer by Claudia Gadelha.
I agree with you guys, but I think that it's also gonna be a decision, and it's gonna be Claudia Gadelha. I agree with you. Dana White just called and wanted to thank us for doing a pick show.
Thank you, dummies.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and close shop, as we're running out of time.
Before we close shop, man, quick show of love to Invicta happening this Friday. We haven't talked about it, man, and the girls are getting our love. Freaking Invicta SC this Friday with a. PG DeSantos of the, you know, and Julie Ketze calling the fights. They got 2 championship fights, and the names escape me right now. Dean, help me out. Who's fighting for the Invicta?
Tanya Evinger is one.
Tanya Evinger, yeah. She should be in the UFC.
I completely agree with you. Tanya Evinger is getting no love. She should be in the UFC. She's, for me, one of the top 10 freaking 135ers in the female division up there. Showtime averages a lot. Let her win this fight. And, you know, Sean Shelby quit being a freaking dumbass and, you know, whatever grab you got with Tony Avenger, put it aside and call this girl so she can get some good fights on the UFC. And,
they gave her an opportunity. She was on the tough show, but she lost.
The Tony Avenger from the tough show is not the Tony Avenger we got right now, bro. That's two completely different fighters.
No, I agree. No, she definitely deserves to be in the UFC. But, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe they won't match the money. You know, sometimes it's she's fighting at least twice a year. You know, she likes being the big fish in the little pond, you know, probably. I don't know. She's up there in age.
She's 35. Has she really fought anyone, guys? I mean, honestly, aside from a Rainey Aldana, who was sick, by the way, when she fought her, right, at Invicta FC 13. And by the way, we're really going to get crickets on talking about Invicta, even though I'm a fan of it. I agree with you, Marco. But do you really think Tonya Avenger is of UFC? And I'll put this in asterisk of UFC top 10 quality.
Yes, I do. And if they're giving Irene Aldana a spot in the UFC on the Sacramento card, they should get Tony Evans and get a spot in the UFC on the Sacramento card, too. Whether you like it or not, the girl has been winning the fights. So she only can beat the people that they put in front of her. And so far, she has looked really good, really dominant. And what else you can do? I mean, the 135 division is not deep enough as it is. After the top five, and we just lost Misha Tate, remember that.
Ooh,
you know, you're gonna need people to fill out the spots. And whether you like Tony Avenger or not, I mean, the girl got a personality. It's a little bit rough on the edges. I understand that, but the girl can fight. And no matter who you put her in front of, she's gonna give you a fight. I even call for her to whenever Chris Cyborg decide to do another 140-pound fight, for Tony Avenger to raise her right hand and say, "Hey, let me fight her. Let's not send all this other girls that nobody knows who the fuck they are to get their asses beat. At least I'll put a fight against Chris Cyborg." But that is just my opinion, you know. I mean, I think Tony Avenger is a gritty, tough fighter, and she's always in the fight no matter who she's going against. So, you know, let's give this girl a chance, dude.
You know what? I agree with him, Dean. Why not put a triple threat Tonya Avenger up against you know, the beast that is, and I mean this in a good way, that is Cyborg. Why not? No one else is willing to put their hands up.
I didn't even think about that one. I mean, yeah, I mean she's had some struggles making 135 sometimes, so she's definitely on the bigger side of the 135 side, pound. I don't think it'll be much of a fight, but it's her way into the UFC if they don't want to give her a shot at bantamweight.
Honestly, guys, I think, and no, you know, people are going to start hanging up now, but I don't think anyone, I think a lot of bantamweights would have a tough time against going up against going up against Cyborg. I'm not joking. I think she's that tough. All right, guys, shall we close shop?
Let's do this.
All right, and shout out, of course, to Marco's buddy, TJ DeSantis. I'm on his Patreon, so shout out to that. Shout out to Dean, who has all the cufflinks and all the ties. How many ties? 70 ties?
About 70.
Good Lord. I want to see your closet space. Good Lord. All right. And we thank Dean from Georgia, the man who came in and saved us. Thank you, Dean, with your ESPN. Damn, that's some damn good analysis. We thank Clearwater, who, Marco, Clearwater barely has time for his own show. So you've got to talk to your colleague there. Marco from Waco, the true star that always makes time for his show. Thank you, Marco. Marco, Twitter follow of the week.
Follow me at Maldo Marco. Follow DJ Tony at DJ Tony. Follow another MMA cast. Follow MMA Junkie Radio. Not because you know better than that. Follow the professor at whatever social media he chooses to finally open. The professor Dean from Georgia. And we're going to meet you guys. See you guys next week.
Attaboy. And unfortunately, I don't think Dean wants to be on any sort of social media, right, Dean?
No, I'm good. I don't have a Twitter account.
All right, well, I'm going to give you one to follow, guys. Follow Amanda Bobby Cooper at ABC Nation 115, at ABC Nation 115. She will be fighting at UFC Fight Night 99. Gentlemen, we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Dean. Thanks to Marco. Thanks to the Clearwater. And like that, Dean, we're gone.
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
And like that.